Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I still loving you. I'm walking down
to this Tuesday evening spur of the moment last minute show with your host Lady A, and we are a part of a group called a Team of Voices, which is under the umbrella of allpoetry.com, the largest poetry group in the world. And I want to say thank you to Deborah Lee, who is our director and producer of all of these shows that we have each evening. And we would be nothing without her. And so tonight is going to be about, because we are entering now in a couple of hours on my end of the world anyways, to December the 1st. So Christmas time is here. And I thought that we would talk about your surprise, the best surprise you ever had at Christmas. What was the best gift that you received, or the best gift that you gave, and that sort of thing. So we're going to have a little bit of fun, and hopefully there'll be some callers, because, like I said, it was just a last-minute deal, so I'll carry on as much as I can, and we'll go from there. So we don't have any callers right now, so I'm going to start out the show. First of all, I want to say word about the song that was just played on the beginning of the program. And there's the words "You Cannot Say" written by our own Jay Hatter and sung and music written by Shout Even Shy. And I think it's a fabulous song, and I hope you did too. And if you did, just, you know, drop us a note somehow through allpoetry.com, a team of voices, and tell us how much you really like that song. So without further ado, I hope I didn't forget anything important right now, but I'm going to talk a little bit about Christmas. I am currently retired over the last couple of 3 or so years, and it seems like it's been only a short time. It's probably even longer than that ago, but in any case, I'm a retired registered nurse, so I worked every second Christmas and every second New Year. We bounced each year off each other. And so Christmas at the hospital was, I think, a very special time. Some of the older nurses would work it so the younger ones could be home with their little kids. And so I didn't mind working on Christmas Day. We would have, one of the girls would bring in a homemade fruit bowl, and we would have muffins and have breakfast together first thing. And another thing that was special to it, too, is we had one of our family doctors would come in with a wine skin of port wine, and we would take the little plastic medicine cup and have a little sip before we started, which was a great tradition, and we looked forward to it. It was fun. And then we made it, we had to do our duties and everything, but we made the day for the patients that were there, and that was very special because a lot of people didn't have anybody. And so we had gifts. The floor always bought gifts for men and women that were on the floor, and especially the ones that didn't have any family. We tried to make their day as fun and friendly as possible because some of them weren't able to go home. Some of them didn't have anyone to go home to. So, but I wrote this poem about working at Christmas. When did I write this? I guess it was just a year ago. I'm just going to check the studio. No, there's no callers yet. So I wrote this poem, and I'm just going to read it. It is called Working at Christmas. Found near death, concrete where she lay her head, frail, fragile, afraid to speak, eye contact, steadfast gaze, earned her trust to speak again. Two of us, she under our wings, pampered with late night baths and ice cream and a few laughs. Feeling special as weeks passed with patience and loving care, she learned to walk. It was complex. Judgment struck from all sides. She could not look into your eyes. Compassion and empathy. Soon she looked back at me. Christmas Day arrived with glee and makeup kits, flat irons too, blouses, sweaters, and candy canes. Bits of jewelry worn all at once. Smiles, gifts just from us. Thick, fuzzy hair, ironed sleek and straight to wear. Working Christmas Day has its perks, I must say. Some may think how lucky she was. I say she was the gift for me. That's in peace. So that was a very special day with this particular person, and her story was very sad. And this day she was very happy, and I wish that I had a picture of her with all her bits of jewelry and necklaces all worn all at the same time, and her hair nice and straight. She loved it. So she had a really great Christmas day, and she made my day, that's for sure. So those are the kinds of things, like if you have surprises, not always about getting. It's often, if not more often than not, about giving at Christmas time. And let me see. I guess I just continue to read some of my other Christmassy kind of stuff. I'm going to take a call first, and I do believe this is Mr. Jay Hatter. Hello, Jay, is that you? better, I should say.
Unmuted. Yes, it's me.
You're unmuted.
Yeah.
Thank you. Did you get to hear my poem that I just read?
No, I didn't. Yeah, sorry. I was running to get here.
I know. I'm going to throw it in the room if you want to look at it later on. You can. I was just talking about being surprised at Christmas or surprising somebody else. What was the best Christmas gift that you got, or what was the best Christmas gift that you gave?
I think I got two that I gave.
Perfect.
So
do you want to tell us a story first before you? That would be great.
Yeah, I had a friend that I grew up with, and we got together right around Halloween for some computer work. He was a computer guy. I built his own computer, and I was going to piece mine together on what I needed. So I'm over there, over his house. It was the house that he grew up in. His parents were no longer around. And his little girl, Erica, cutest thing, she must have been all of 4 years old or something. She kept sort of following me around and these big brown eyes, and I said, Santa's? And so, you waiting for Santa to show up on Christmas? She goes, we're not having one this year. I go, what? Find out that Mitch was had to tell his kids that there'd be no presents this year. So
aww.
I made it my own. I got Mitch by myself. I said, that won't happen. I asked him if he had any money for turkey, you know, any meals. He said no. So I bought him two full dinners that he could go get from the Safeway store. And then we went into a Toys R Us type store and bought some things. Then I said, you know what, Mitch? Well, how about I give each one of your kids $100 to they can come down and get what they want. That way, I don't have to, you know, guess. He was very reluctant taking it. He was very reluctant taking any of this from me, but I insisted since I wasn't around my family that year. And that was I did that for a friend and didn't expect anything back. I see the happiness in his eyes that he was able to do for his kids, plus a little embarrassment that he came along with it. But I told him, you know, we were good enough friends that shouldn't be it. That was one of the ones that I gave. I think the other one was I drew my mother her graduation picture when she was 19 years old, and I drew it and framed it. When she was 71. I can't remember the year. I think it was right around just past the 2000. But I gave it to her the day before Christmas, and she opened it. I go, do you recognize who that is? And she just started crying. And she goes, oh, it took me, I swear I'd never do another portrait, because it took me 3 months, four different tries, and haunting. It was just, I got it done. I quit. It's one of those things where you got to go, less is more. Quit messing with it. Whenever it's, you know, looks good enough, quit messing with it. And so I got it to her, and she was, she knew I drew, but she didn't know I did the portraits or anything like that. So I think the look in her eyes was precious. So I think those two are probably the two best I've ever given.
I love it when you can surprise someone that you care about. And those are great stories too. I think that we can all take time out and do something for somebody else. And because you know what it does, it gives you the best feeling when you've done something like that. You know, it's a gift for us.
Well,
you know,
that's what it's about. It's about giving. You have to understand that giving something to somebody doesn't mean you're going to get anything, and you shouldn't expect anything, because to me that ruins it. If I, for example, I bought a laptop, a cheap laptop, it cost me a couple $100 for a person, and immediately had to go out, find out how much that was worth, then bought me a set of tools that I really didn't need at the time that fit that, you know, that amount, and you didn't need to do that, you know. I know you can't afford it. Why did you do that? you've just ruined it for me.
No.
Because sometimes you give things for yourself. It's a selfish thing. I don't think it is. That I do things for people that it's with a selfish motive. Whatever that might be is my own business. But it's not only, always doing something to be recognized for. I had a ministry for children that were passed around in foster homes for with parents that were incarcerated. These kids are sort of in a gray limbo zone. They have to wait for their parents to at least one or two of the parents to get out of prison. And it's not nothing that they had ever done, but sometimes they're put in some really stressful positions being so young. So I would go through the year. I'd collect toys. I was a claw master, so I could go in one of those claws games. I could pretty much get what I wanted out of it. That turned into other people donating. Mm-hmm. A claw is a little game that you walk into. It's an arcade game. You set the hook, and you drop the hook to try to grab something.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, that's a claw. Okay. And everything could be the tension and the is all adjustable. So you have to find one that will work. Well, anyway, I got to where I had quite a few of these stuffed animals and then the toys and stuff. And somebody asked me what I was going to do with them. I said, well, I think I'm going to donate them to the church down the street, from where I was at, which I ended up doing. But in that sort of caught fire what I was doing. So everybody was giving me two or three toys, stuffed animals, brand new. They had to be brand new. They couldn't be used or anything like that. Then the company that supplies the toys for the actual games through their rep found out that I was doing that. So he showed up the next week. I was told by the sales rep to, if I was going to be here, and I said, sure, I'll be here. It was on a Saturday. So I was there, and he says, yeah, I got something for you. So he walks out. He gives me three big bags. I mean, these are the big, big leaf bags, the trash bags, but they're the huge ones. He had three of those full of toys. And she goes, these are all too big for my claw games. Can you take them? And I don't know what I was going to do with them. So I got all these games and toys and stuff that they couldn't use. And it became a ministry
every
year that I would have. It blew my mom away. She goes, what do you get to do with all these toys? You do know that it is taking up a whole bedroom. I go, yeah, Mom, I know. It's for Christmas, man. when I wrote the right Matthew about the little autistic kid that befriended me at Christmas time and that I ran into him years later, do you remember that right? Called Matthew?
Like, vaguely tell us.
Okay. Well, it's just that's what I was doing at the time, was at the church unloading the bags of toys when I ran into Matthew again. And maybe I could read that later if we've got time.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That's how we got to read it once. What was my point? Oh, give me the toys at Christmas. It was the most... the church, the minister, the head of the deacon, it was a Baptist church, the deacon, I guess, came in and he goes, I want you to show up at one of our masses to introduce you. So I go, no, that's okay, sir. I don't need to. He really felt that I needed to be recognized for what I was doing. And I insistingly said, no, I don't do it for that. I don't do it all for recognition at all. It would change it. It would change it in my own head. If I'd rather it be just somebody that cared. You just put it that way.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be surprised how many people want you to be recognized for what you do. Sometimes it's not about that. Sometimes it's about me, how I felt in doing it and what I received without anybody knowing. I had to tell my mom.
Well, I think that's important, what you're saying there, because I think a lot of times – it's better to give without expecting anything back, without expecting to be recognized. It's just I wanted to do something for a friend the other day, and I bought something for her, and then I thought to myself, there was something else that went with it, and I thought I should go back and get it. And anyhow, one thing led to another, and I was talking with her, and I mentioned to her, because I had already given her something, and I said, I'd like to get you the matching whatever it was. And she said, no, you already gave me too much. And I said to her, because this is how I am. That's how I, other than, you know, affection, showing physical affection and doing little things for people, I love to give gifts because it's to me, it's a great way of expression on how you feel about, if you can, if that's something. But I love it. And even at Christmas, like I have, my gifts are all wrapped with big real bows and ribbons, and to me that's all part of it. And it's a lovely way, even if it's something insignificant, to wrap it up in a great big box. You know what I mean? It's just a fun thing to do, and I don't expect anything back. My gift is being able to give to them, and their reaction in return is what I love. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, I had a friend that first time I'd ever been in his backyard. I'd met him several years ago, and he grew up in the same area I did. I just didn't. He was a lot older than I was, and got his backyard and saw this old horseshoe pit. I go, oh man, you got a horseshoe pit? He goes, yeah, it's all regulation and everything, but I just haven't had time and everything. So all right. Then I'm in Walmart, 2 o'clock in the morning or something. And I see this horseshoe kit, the original, you know, the whole official, I guess they say official, with the horseshoes and the whole bit in the case. It was really heavy, so it was for $40 or something. So I bought it for him. And then the next time I saw him, I go, hey man, Randy here. This Friday, he goes, oh man, I didn't get you anything, because it happened to be at Christmas time. And I go, no, you don't owe me anything, man. This is for you, because I had the money. I know you needed it. And let's get the horseshoe thing going. And he couldn't understand why I didn't want anything back for it. I said, because that's not what you do at Christmas. That's not what you do, man. Since I got you this, and Merry Christmas. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
The whole purpose of meeting the Christmas gift
thing,
lost.
Eh? And it's something that, it's like I said, it's a gift in itself to be able to do that and to have that kind of, I don't think that's a selfish thing. I think what's selfish is if you give something and expect something back. You give a gift that they were on your list, but you're not on their list, and then you don't get anything. That's being really selfish. And it's to give, even if it's not Christmas, is to be able to give a part of yourself without expecting anything back. It's like expectations of a relationship. Yeah.
If you wait, for, I'm not getting him anything because I never get anything from him. That's not the point.
Exactly.
The whole point of Christmas isn't receiving anything. It's to give somebody a gift, the appreciation of your friendship, or to let them know that you are loved, that they are loved. And if you are expecting something back, shame on you. You're missing in the point. You're missing it. A lot of times I would I've given as presents before for people that have asked. And I used to make these little memory things they called the sportsman hutch. And a lot of my friends still have them, that on their walls, that I made back in the day very cheaply. So, and these are people that I normally wouldn't buy Christmas present or hang Christmas with, and that's fine. My enjoyment is 40 years later, it's still on your wall, and I can walk into your house and go and see it. I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
It's like with my art. My art's on 5 continents, the number of countries, and I appreciate that. Just knowing that somebody took enough interest that it's, you know, hanging on their walls, so they think it's good enough.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you. It's have you got that poem up that you'd like to read for us? That would be great.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it's called Matthew. And okay. I used to read this every Autistic Week that Gress would have. But it's been a while.
Oh yeah.
It's called Matthew. Called Matthew. That's not him, but he looked very similar to that. And here goes. I met a young boy in the 10th year of his life. He was the neighbor of a friend I worked with, and every night when we got home, little Matthew would show up on his bike. Matthew was autistic, I was told, and never smiled or spoke. I could tell he was starved for a friend. It was in his eyes. So each night when I pulled up, I would make an effort to say hi. Sometimes I would get a grin, and I knew right then that I could get Matthew to laugh. I thought of how I could befriend him somehow. So I waited for many days. One day Matthew was called by a voice down the street and dropped his bike at his feet and went running on home. I picked up the toy and waited for the special little boy. Now, Matthew was a small child, and his bike was even smaller, like a Schwinn Stingray, and tiny pedals and tiny wheels, tiny handlebars that made me feel huge trying to ride his bike. 2 minutes had passed when Matthew came back, now looking for his bike. When his eyes could see that it was me holding his bike in the yard, no time passed before I asked if it were okay to ride his bike. He looked at me with a funny type face and could see in his head there was no way that I could ride this tiny bike. With a look of I'd like to see that, he's going to be flat on his back, tried to ride my Schwinn, Matthew agreed that it would be me that took his wheels out for a spin. I could barely pedal the tiny thing up the road and then back again to the grass where I'd lay it down. I'd roll away like a circus clown, then picked it up to take it around one more time up to the road and then back to the grass, trying to see so that Matthew was able to laugh. I could see that it was just Matthew and me as I walked back to his bike to thank him. His eyes looked down, scanning the ground. When I saw it was more than a grin. It was what I was after. It was a borderline laughter. I stuck out my hand to thank him. Matthew, I want to thank you for letting me ride your awesome bike. There was a place on his face as it tried to speak, but only a whisper, and I wasn't quite sure, but his lips, I had just spoken a word. It was okay, and maybe another day he could tell me what was in his head. For years, I wondered what Matthew had pondered and was it that he so quietly said? I watched as he rode his bicycle home. He pulled in 4 doors down. As he pulled off at the street, he looked back at me, and we both started to wave. My friend told me he had never seen Matthew smile or grin or even get close enough to have someone touch him. Like a feral cat, he had no trust and no one to set him free. This went on for on through the springtime that year. Then one day I was sad to hear Matthew had moved away. Life went on and the years passed by, and Christmas time I'd think of Matthew and his awesome bike. At Christmas ministry for children, I gave toys to those who would not have. Parents in jail for our parents just missing didn't matter to me. I would gather toys for foster girls and boys that would not have much of a Christmas. I store them away just for the day I would haul them to the nearby church. This year I met a family that showed up a bit early to go through my Christmas toys. In a corner there stood a boy with a hood about 16. He was staring at me. I would politely smile, but all the while I thought there was something about this young man. He kept unloading more toys when I noticed the boy had slowly made his way close to me. I waved and smiled and thought of a child that would like to rummage through a big bag of toys. I asked if he wanted to see and if he could maybe help me. So I gave him his own bag of toys. He nodded and smiled, and still all the while there was something about this kid. So I started talking to make him feel at ease when all of a sudden it came to me. I watched as he looked at each toy he had, then back to the bag for another. I thought maybe it might be that kid with the bike when I was a circus clown. "Hey, Matthew," I whispered. His head rose out of the bag and looked at me hard. I was sure it was that little boy from the years ago whose bike was crashed in the yard. Much older now, and I could see somehow he also knew that it was me. When he stared in my eyes, I wanted to cry. I needed to see that beautiful smile. I reached out my hand so he would understand that we could remember for a while. I whispered again, "Matthew, do you remember me?" He nodded and bowed his head, trying to hide the tears that began to run down his cheek. Not a word did he say. He just held on that day. I told him it had been too long. The best thing that Christmas was a little boy that showed up for some toys, and no better a Christmas gift could I have asked for. It was then I did see he was smiling at me, and everything seemed to be right. Our little chat brought it all back, and I said, "Merry Christmas, Matthew." I glanced over to see the adults staring at me, and I knew that they had seen it too. Matthew was happy digging through that bag as if it were a buried treasure. With his face lit up for all to see, Matthew appeared to have been set free. I knelt there and watched the young man grow. Never had I seen someone so happy with his head buried in an old duffel bag. Matthew had been put through foster care and was bounced around throughout his young life, and it appeared he landed in a place he could call home. It was so nice to know that there were people out there that to show the love for a child, not theirs. What everyone had seen, they could not believe. Surely they saw Matthew smile. When later they asked, I explained from the past, Matthew and I were good old friends. And it was so good to see that he remembered me, and our friendship had no end. From back in the day, the grown-ups heard me say, "Matthew had taught me to ride his awesome bike." His face turned to a smile, and it stayed for a while, and for again, all seemed to be right. The time had rushed by, and I knew that I was about to miss him again. I watched that little boy grow up before my eyes. He stood in front of me wearing a young man's grin. I told him how good it was to see him again, and I hoped he had all that he needs. He started to leave, but turned so all could see. "Merry Christmas" was the last thing he whispered to me. I spent my holidays now thinking of Matthew and how he might have climbed out of his cell. I will always remember the times in December, and I hope he does as well.
Wow.
True story of a boy and his bike and a big bag of toys.
That is absolutely, I had started to cry a couple of times through this. This is an amazing story. I thought it was just incredible that you were able to reach him. Something about you and him, and you were able to reach him, and he remembered you. And I think this is just an absolutely fantastic story and piece of poetry. It was so moving, and the time that when you met him again when he was a little older, but he was thinking the same as you. Who is it? I think I know this guy. And, you know, how great is it to make a difference in somebody's life? And, you know, it makes me wonder, where is he today? And, you know, what happened to him? And, but you have to know, Hatter, that you made a difference in his life. Those times, you know, made him feel that you cared about him, that he was cared for, that somebody cared. And I just think this is absolutely fantastic. And we have Sweet Pea on the line here. Hi, Sweet.
Hi, honey. How are you?
Good. Glad you called in. Did you get to hear Hatter's piece?
I did. It's actually, I love hearing this piece every year.
So fantastic, isn't it?
It is. I love it. It's one of my, like, Christmas stories I get to hear. I love hearing the story of him and Matthew. It's heartwarming. It's beautiful. It's a Hatter story. It just embraces your heart.
Yeah. It just, it's so moving. I'm just utterly, I'm just overwhelmed thinking of it. And I mean, it just, and then it goes back to you, Hatter, and I'm going to, you know, this kid, wherever he is today, this young man, you had an influence on his life. This reminds me of Mitch Albom's book, The Five People You Meet in Heaven. And you may not know till you both get there what influence you had on his life, but I know it must have been profound and just a beautiful story. Thank you. Thank you so much for reading it and sharing that with us. It was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Sweetie
I didn't
P,
know.
How are you? What were you going to say, Hatter?
I was just going to say, when I first met Matthew, Dave, my partner, he said that the kid just came and started hanging around when my kids were out front. He says he doesn't talk, he doesn't laugh, and just needed to be around the other kids, I guess. So when I was able to make him laugh riding that tiny little bike, and then what I do is just dump it into the tall grass and fall, you know, roll. And he thought that he goes, that's the most I've ever seen Matthew expression-wise emotions I've ever seen. And he also said, when you kind of, you handed his bike, he goes, that's the closest anybody's been able to get to him. Usually he won't get near you until, if you give him something, you got to lay it down, he'll come get it, you know. So then when I met him at least 8 years later, 10 years later, something like that, I don't know if he was still in that shell because the time that I was with him was so you know, small. So for him to turn back and say, whisper Merry Christmas to me vocally, to me was huge. I would heard was that Matthew doesn't communicate, talk. They said, oh no, he can talk. He just doesn't. So,
yeah.
And I was told by the people that had Matthew, say that's the most emotion they had seen in a long time. But I don't know when he left. I don't know if that's the first time he had talked or not. I'd like to think that it was, but he probably had to verbalize a little more by then. But yeah, he knew it was me way before I knew it was him.
Oh well, you know what? I'm getting chills thinking about it. Like, it just is such an amazing story, and you know, you may have made the difference in him so that he would talk again. It's hard to know what a kid like that went through in his life, you know, and pretty amazing, pretty darn amazing. So, Sweet, what about you now? Do you have a story that you'd like to tell us and then read a poem for us? Like, I'd like to know, is there something that you can share with us that was a surprise to you or to somebody else?
I didn't write the poem about it, but I think, you know, I've always had a lot of my kids. I've been very blessed to have helped and had a life of a lot of what I would, and it's kind of like what Wayne does now, is I have had the house where if you have nowhere to go, or if, you know, there's nowhere to go, you know, my house was the house where it was always movies. It's always a warm place. There was pizza. There was, you know, food. You could take a shower. You know, clothes could be washed. There are a lot of parents out there that, you know, want to throw away kids at 14 and 15 years old. And I ended up raising 8 kids whose parents literally put them on the streets.
Wow.
Okay. I have a young lady, because she was gay, her parents didn't want anything to do with her. I have another young man, you know, whose parents thought he was just a thug and couldn't learn. who, by the way, is just as much my son as any other son I gave birth to, and so is she. A couple that unfortunately got involved in drugs and, you know, had to get clean. A couple that thought they could drop out of high school, but every one of them, they got their high school graduation, you know, got those diplomas. It's just, you know, and now I'm still, they're all in their 30s, and they're still, you know, hey, mom, what do you need? Hey, mom. So it's a very full life when you are willing to give. It's also a very frustrating life when, you know, you're battling people that think it's okay to throw away a 15 or 16-year-old. If you think about what a child learns from birth till they're 5 years old, how much they learn about socialization and talking and walking, and, you know, they pack so much in those 5 years, because literally their whole world changes. And then if you take that same thought process and you go from 15 to 20, it's the same amount of growth, the same amount of change, the same amount of learning how to re-talk, learning how to re-socialize, the same amount of growth. You change so much between the years of 15 and 20, just like you change so much between the time you're born and 5 years old. And so many people don't realize that growth and how everything shifts. It's so different. And they want to just say, oh, you're grown, you think you're grown, get out, get out. But it's literally taking like a brand new baby and telling them, get out, when the whole world's going to change on them in 5 years. So I think it takes a lot of time and consideration to know that you're just handling an infant. And maybe an infant adult or an infant going into adult, it's just like having a newborn baby. So I've been really blessed working with a lot of kids trust me, they were difficult kids. But having the patience and having them in my home around Christmas and you know, dealing with the sadness that they had, but being able to have joy, especially now that I'm older,
yeah.
Because their kids bring me joy. So.
Yeah, I think I feel like that's so important. The underdog, the kid. You know, I have a friend of mine who, when she turned 18, her parents got her a suitcase. Get out. There's a lot of kids that go through that. They turn 18,
yeah.
And what's your hurry? You know what I mean? And off they go on their own. And with, you know, practically nothing. As soon as they turn 18, they're booted out, just like you said. And, I mean, holy guacamole. And then you have the other kids that are 35 and they're still living at home.
At home, yeah. It's just, it's crazy. I mean, 18 is better than 15, but still, I mean, if your parents have done their job and prepared you, that's one thing. But if they haven't, that's completely another thing, too. So, but my wish for Christmas is snow this year. I want snow because Colorado's in a big drought right now, and we haven't seen snow. So that's why I brought my poem tonight, is my wish for snow.
Well, come on up here because we have lots of it right now. We got our first big storm yesterday.
Did you? We don't have any snow. Really, really bad. And we need orographic snow.
Yeah,
that's my big word of the day, orographic, which I learned was mountain snow. So.
Yeah, it must be scary. It's been really strange. They were talking about the weather there earlier, and they said on the news that the temperatures are going to be colder and there's going to be less precipitation, but the temperatures have dropped, I think, 2 or 3 degrees lower than average, which is quite substantial.
Yeah. But, we haven't had a drop. I mean, this is, I think, we've broken, like, an 87-year record or something like that, without any nothing. There's nothing coming down. That's awful.
Wow.
So
now,
I
did
want
you bring
on the other side.
Go ahead.
And the other thing of it is that if I can get through this, my dad and I used to call each other anytime it was a snow day. And everybody knows I've recently lost him. And I haven't been able to call or think about, hey, Dad, it's a snow day, or it's a snow day. So I want it to snow on Christmas so that he's part of my Christmas. Because then I know that I had a snow day. So I really want it to snow on Christmas.
You know, where I grew up, it doesn't snow. And we had one Christmas day that it snowed, and one Christmas Eve, or two Christmas Eves, that it got cold enough to snow. And it doesn't snow here.
Yeah. So.
Well, apparently it does.
That's kind of my big surprise is what I want.
Yeah.
It's for my daddy to snow for me on Christmas so we have a snow day together.
I'm amazed at how many in my whole life, how many, getting back to mom and dad every Christmas, how good the weather was on Christmas Day. Whether it stormed on Christmas Eve or the day after, it seemed like the sun was always out on Christmas Day. And I can only think of one or two that are exceptions. But other than that, it's sort of surprising for December.
No, not us. We were always buried by Lake Erie snow, the Lake Effect snow.
Yeah,
I mean, always had snow.
Well, I'll tell you, there's been a dramatic change in our winters here. Like, they've been very, very mild. Like, last winter, there wasn't even any ice in the bay. Usually it's frozen solid. And there were times where there was ice, but then within 2 days it was gone. So the bay never even, the strait, it never even froze over, and which was very, very, very unusual. So, and one says, oh, yay, it's not that cold, though there's not that much snow, but it tells you a lot about global warming.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy.
And, like, you guys out west, like, the fires and stuff, like, holy guacamole. It is changing. It is very evident.
Yeah, they've known the weather. They've known to the Farmer's Almanac that the weather patterns from the 1890s that the weather was going to get warmer. Now that's not an unscientific thing to say, because everybody knows we are coming out of an ice age. These ages that we are talking about, they go 1,000 to 10,000 year cycles. So for us to be coming out of an ice age, of course, everything is going to be warming up, because that is what happens when you leave an ice age. Whatever is in the future for us is probably unknown, and our fingerprints of what we do here on Earth are yet to be determined. But it's amazing how that half a degree in the ocean can cause such havoc.
Even in the summertime here, like, we always have great summers, but they're so hot now. They never used to be this warm. Like, I mean, it's always been great having summer, but there's some days that it's unbelievably hot.
You're up at the top of the Gulf Stream, right, where the Gulf Stream would start, basically.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, you know, we have four seasons,
which is
great, but our springs are very – the winter is lasting longer. It's very wet and rainy in the spring, which never used to be as bad as it is now. And then the summer, it goes from spring – it goes from winter to spring for, like, it seems like only a few days, and then the next thing you know, it's scorching hot, and you're putting your boots away, and you get your bathing suit on. It's that dramatic at times.
Yeah, that's amazing, because you're at a latitude that we would expect more cold weather
Yeah. Yeah, you know, people make a mistake, though, that they think that if you're north of the border of the U.S. that we're all living in igloos. I mean, we do have the same seasons as you guys do.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, how
do
you know?
I have the same problem in Colorado.
It's,
No, it's not always snowing there.
Yeah, it's even moving a house.
So it's, sweet, do you want to read, you feel up to reading a poem for us?
Yeah, my poem is on the board.
Alrighty then.
Alrighty.
You put it on
Fill
the board,
boot.
Didn't you?
I put it on the board, yeah.
Okay. This is Nuzzled in Silver Clouds. Nuzzled in silver clouds, amber rays snuggled into sleep over the northern horizons. The tint of orange in autumn winds disappeared in the icy blue views of morning dew. Squirrels and birds shortened their day as the smell of winter warned them to shelter. Ice crystals gathered and tumbled to earth in the paths of silence, delicate in design, Armageddon invaders masquerade as cherubs. Soldiers trained to conquer mountains weave softly onto eyelashes and dance briskly on giggling tongues, tumbling to the surface by the million, thick-sided chameleons, very towns, the immovable partnership of individual snowflakes and poems.
Oh, wow. This is really, you know, and it's true, I mean, just that last part of it, that the immovable partnerships of individual snowflakes, and not one single flake is the same. And you can you imagine how many that is? And, you know, they, and I love the picture, too.
You know, I
really took
that
picture. Yeah, I just read that you had taken it. I think you described this transition from the autumn winds disappeared in the icy blue view of a morning dew. I thought that was great. And I love, you know, this, you throw squirrels in there and the birds shorten their day as the smell of winter warned them to shelter. And isn't it true there's a certain smell in the air when winter is present, as just like there's that smell in the air when spring comes. I don't know if you ever
mm-hmm.
noticed that or not. Oh, so it's wonderful. Yeah. And I like that the ice crystals gather and tumble to earth. And the Armageddon invaders and masquerade as cherubs. Do you know, I remember in my life twice that we were absolutely buried in snow, that snow was right to the rooftops. People were skidooing in the streets. There was impossible to plow. It was, we had 7, 8, 10 foot drifts. The house on one side when I was younger, the house on one side was completely buried, like you couldn't get out the door. There was so much snow. And there was twice in my life that I've seen that. We've had so much snow. And when you think about, and it is like an Armageddon. It is like they come, the snow comes, you're helpless against Mother Nature sometimes when it's something like that, or the water, the floods, the fires, all of the, you know, we think we're so smart and we're not. And
no.
But I love how you talked about the snowflakes having solidarity in their job to cover the ground and immovable partnerships. The Six Sides Chameleon, Barry Towns. What a great piece. Hatter, what did you think?
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I think I like the ending. Like you said, the idea that none of them are the same makes them a group, like, you know, poorly said.
Oh, yeah.
The move of partnership with individual snowflakes. Yeah, it's just, I enjoy when Sweet Pea reads. I enjoy her metaphors, the way she writes, and I'm enjoying that so much I'm not paying attention to the storyline. But what was the other part? Squirrel and birds, certainly. Now, when you said you had those snowdrifts being so high, was that uncommon back then? Not really, huh?
Well, I think it's uncommon when you get snow that high any time. But, I mean, I've definitely been in those kind of snows, but they're pretty uncommon when you get 10-foot drifts. That's uncommon, but you remember them.
There's some pictures somewhere that the sides of the walkway, the driveway, I'm 5'2", and the snow is at least 2 feet higher than I am. It's unreal sometimes. It's not normally like that, but when it goes, it just goes. This one time, that when it would get like that, you had 3 days of blizzard conditions, like 3 days where it was unrelenting. So the accumulation of snow was just unbelievable. You guys get that out of Colorado, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, don't say it. But do you know what year it was?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, 67? I know. Pardon me?
67?
It was probably closer to 70, 73 maybe.
Would have been my next guess. Okay.
And then the last big one was like that was in 1992.
Okay. Just trying to see if there's any similar patterns that we've had out here on the West Coast for years.
Well, they sort of, there is a correlation, I think, between the two coasts, opposites, I think, for the most part.
Oh, really?
But I think you guys in the Midwest, I think the Western, like British Columbia is hit really hard with, they've got places that are cut off right now because of the mudslides and the collapsing of roads and stuff. They've got a real problem out there in the last week or so because of the rain.
1997?
No, I think it was 93. In Colorado for you guys?
Colorado.
Okay.
1997 was huge for me. Huge. It was just incredibly epic. That was crazy, crazy. Epic for me in 1997. And then in March 13 and 14 of 2021, which was just last year, or actually it was this year, was unbelievable. We got 50 inches of snow in 2 years.
Just checking the studio. I wanted to see what the record snowfall.
Now, there's a difference between wet snowfall and dry, right? As far as
and then there was the blizzard of March in March of 2003, because we tend to get a lot of spring blizzards that are nuts. So 2003, 2021, and 1993.
And how many inches did you get? Did you say?
Up to 50.
Wow.
20 to 50 inches, depending on where you lived in Colorado. So March 17th and 19th, 2003, and then March 13th and 14th in 2021. All March.
Now,
wow.
Is it beyond their average snowfall, or is that the total? So would you add 50 inches onto their average?
I would add 50 inches onto the average, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just looking at, when was this? In 2009. the record of snowfall right across the province. Let me see. It was 65 centimeters. Oh, shoot. What's that in inches? I hate that one. I've never gotten accustomed to the metric system at all.
How many meters?
65 centimeters would be how many inches?
65 centimeters is 2 feet. 2 feet, 1.5 inches.
Wow. That's a lot of snow, but 50 must have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And, unbelievable. But that was, you're talking mountains. That's mountain snow, too. I mean, those places get trashed. We probably here got about 24 inches, which is about 2 feet.
Yeah. Now, I'm going back at the record. The snow, remember that storm I said that we could go, it was 1992, not 93. It was it matched snow record set in 1992. Let me see, what else does it say here? It matched a record of snow on the ground set in 1992. A three-day February storm dumped more than 160 centimeters of snow in 3 days. How many inches is that, Hatter?
Oh, I'm sorry. How many?
100. Wait, now where is it? 160 centimeters of snow in 3 days.
Is 160 centimeters is 1.35 yards. So it's three and three quarter yards.
Wow.
Or wait, one and three quarter yards. Or 3 feet.
Yeah. And they had 10 foot snowbanks.
That's five feet. 5 feet something.
And then they had 10 foot snowbanks. Oh yeah, that was just unbelievable.
I've seen
Holy
pictures
crap.
Of the
okay, so here they are.
Top.
The top.
Oh, we get a call, and I think it's AP.
We got the top 10 snowstorms here. I got.
Hi, AP. How are you?
Quebec is number 9.
Hey, good lady A. How are you?
Good.
Hey,
we're just talking about snowfall. What did you say, sweet?
Okay, so the top 10 are, let me see, the top 10 snowstorms. You've got number 10 is Chicago in 1967, 23 inches. Ontario, Quebec, 1971, 24 inches. New York City, 2006, 26.9 inches. Boston, 1978, 26.1 inches. The Appalachians and Catskills, 1993, 50 inches. Saratoga Springs, New York, 1888, 58 inches. Lucerne County, Tibet, 2008, 72 inches. New England, 1717, 108 inches. And the reason and that's because of the amount of time that itself, not necessarily the great amount, but it's within a certain amount of time. Montana, Shasta, California, 1959, 189 inches.
What time is that?
Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta, California.
Yes, yeah, just north of there.
That one in Quebec, the last one in Quebec that you mentioned, that was a huge, there was an ice storm, too. And there were people
and
from all around.
One, yeah. And the number one in 1977, Buffalo, New York, 199.4 inches.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember that.
So do you guys get snow like that down under?
The last snow in Melbourne was in 1986.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Are you in a hurry, AP?
Sorry? No.
Are you in a hurry?
No, I'm hanging around.
You're okay?
Yeah.
Well, that is really amazing. Yes, Mr. AP is calling from down under. Now, do you have a piece that you would like to share? Like, are you? So if you're not in a hurry, I'm going to get Sweet to put hers up first, if that's okay with you.
No, get this.
I already did.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. Yes, you did. I'm very sorry. I lost my mind there for 1 second. That's right. AP, we can get yours up. And then I think Budo has submitted something as well. Let me just go check them.
And
he's not he's not calling in, I don't think. But let's see if he's put something up there. Yeah, he did. I'm hoping he'd call in, but I don't know if he will or not. But I can read it for him if not. So, AP, if you want to put yours up there, go ahead. Have you got a story for us first about some surprise that you've given or gotten that you'd like to share?
For Christmas?
For
Christmas, right out? Okay, well, I made a mistake. Go figure. I do it often. And I actually went and organised a holiday for Christmas. It wasn't at Christmas, but it was a Christmas holiday, up to Singapore for the family. And stupidly, I did that when it was the Grand Prix in Melbourne. And my middle child is a man Grand Prix nut. And so he was most upset because he was going to miss the Melbourne Grand Prix because we were going to be in Singapore.
Yeah.
So anyway, what I did was the Malaysian Grand Prix was the next one on the calendar. And so when we were in Singapore, I organized for the two of us to go to the Malaysian Grand Prix instead of the Melbourne Grand Prix. And so we went up on the plane, then we went in the fast train, and then we went straight to the track. And we sweated ourselves stupidly for about 12 hours until the bloody... I mean, there was no minor races. There was just the Grand Prix and a whole heap of jet planes. And that was it, you know. And so basically it just... We sat there and cried. But anyway, we cried. And then we saw the Grand Prix and it was absolutely fantastic. And he still wanders around in the hat that we got, which is... But, you know, understated, of course, for my middle son, which basically has the whole shebang race course on the hat, in the symbol, on the front of it, and he loves it. So there you go.
Nice.
Well, that must have been a great surprise.
It was, and Michael Schumacher got on the plane on the way home, and he was beside himself.
Oh!
So
wow.
So... Yeah. I managed to. Sometimes you can have some good luck as well, but that's allowed.
Excellent.
So, okay. Well, you know, what do I? Because it's about sort of Christmas and surprises and stuff like that, Lady A. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I'm going to put one of my Christmassy poems on the board, if that's okay. Because
absolutely,
I kind of like Christmas in Australia, and it's sort of kind of fun, it's sort of kind of different. And this one's from a couple of years ago, and I was honestly wandering along a country highway, and I came upon this group of this image of agricultural gear with Santas on them. And I had to stop and take a photo. So this is vehicles, wide, thin or rusted. And it goes a little bit like this. Santa rides atop a vintage Ford, sitting on an old baler, in shapes by size hoard, festivities tailor. Celebrate on a massy tractor or a combine harvester. Vehicles describe a score, seasonal or blur. A greeting on a rusted header, steam traction engine. Tinsel hats by sun redder, wide, sunny as June grin. Pink face hides behind a tree, inspecting his trunk. Curly beard is off with tea, sugar cubes sunk. Gross Bold drives a fire vehicle, another the barbecue. Last is left with a tricycle, as his presents few. By vehicles wide, thin or rusted, Charles gifts given away. Answering call is mustard. Lastly, even slight. End poem.
Oh. What a great piece. And I like the antique part of it all, you know, the different,
yeah.
The picture that you provided was just great. And, you know, the whole thing was something to smile about. And I like the dress bold drives a fire vehicle, another the barbecue. Last is left with a tricycle, as his presents few. By vehicles wide, thin or rusted, child's gifts given away. Answering call is mustard, lastly even sleigh. Now, tell me what the inspiration was of this piece.
Literally, Lady O, it was seeing all these old vehicles with Santas all over them, sitting by the side of the road. I mean, I saw them all, and then I took a swag of photos, and I went home and wrote a poem.
Wow. So you actually took this picture, too, and Sweet took her picture as well.
Yeah. That's my picture.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
I thought that this was great, and I was just reading Pretty Bird's comment. Santa's helper scatter and bring the children's gifts enough that the sleigh takes up the rear and whatever may have been overlooked. That is fabulous. This is a really, like a nostalgic, you can picture everything, and the imagery is so rich, and I thought it was inspiring. What did you think, Sweet?
I love the oddity of it, the fact that you're just driving along and there's Santa. It's the vintage Ford, but I love that you wrote the poem about it, because it's like, bam, there's an inspiration, there's Santa. I have no idea why the gentleman put Santa along in his cars, but it's
no idea either.
Just it's just there, and I loved it when you read it, and I love it even more because, I don't know, it's just so endearing to me, and I'm just kind of in that place where driving along and, hello, Santa, it makes me even giggle more, the thought of you just driving along and it's there, my vehicle's wide and thin or rusted, child gets to give it away, answering calls as mustard, lastly, even sleigh, it's just fabulous. It's really great, and I just love the imagery more of you driving by.
No. Well, I saw it, and I just pulled up, you know, super quick. Luckily, there was nobody behind me. Pulled up by the side of the road, got out the camera, and started taking shots. I was like, shit, that's fun. Do something with that.
Great job.
Anything American weird.
At the end of the show, I'm going to read my piece over again because there was nobody actually heard it, so I'll read it. I don't know if you were listening earlier or not, but we have Budo's piece. But I would like, if you have, you know, another Christmas one or another story to tell, that would be great. And I think that I hope that we're going to be doing for the next few days up until the Christmas time, Christmassy stuff. And it's always a fun thing for the most part it's fun. A lot of people don't have great things happening for Christmas, but...
Can I say something about AP's poem?
Sure.
AP, so you saw this on the side of the road. You saw this display.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
if you blow it up, there's a Santa or two on every one of those trucks. Now, looking at them. These were working trucks because every one of them's got dualies. It's got a dual axle in the back. Every one of them.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what kind of work dog these things were with those dualies. I don't. Were they like feed? Just a feed? All feed? Why
maybe.
Dualies?
I mean, you're right though, Hatter. You're right. They're both. They're all doubled up. On the back axles, I suspect they probably might have been pulling the agricultural equipment back in the day. They might have actually been pulling the header and the harvest. Yeah.
I guess because of I don't know. Usually that doesn't work if you're in corrugated cultivated ground. Those dualies wouldn't do much for you.
But it's reasonably dry there, Hatter, so I suspect that's probably what they're doing.
Yeah, I could see them pulling the trailers for balers, anything, or feed that kind of thing. But some classic trucks. Look at the grills on those things.
No, they're classic great trucks. Ones. They're great trucks, and as you correctly pointed out, they're all got double axles on them. They just called to me for some reason just to take a photo of them, Hatter, because they're great set of vehicles.
Yeah, I bet they hauled the heavy machinery, or the multiple cars down the road. That's what it is. You guys were always able to hook up to more than one trailer, more than one, two trailers.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, no, just as I said, I just was wandering along in the middle of nowhere, and I sort of saw that, and I thought, I've got to take some photos of that. You know, I'm not going to be able to write a poem about that, surely. You know,
was it still there?
I don't know. It's a good question, actually. I'll have to wander up and have a look when I can drive a car properly. So, fingers crossed, it won't be too long.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of money right there just in grills. Quarter panels.
There you go. So, anyway, cool. Back. Sorry, lady, we interrupted.
No, that's quite all right. I like the stories. I like the interaction. I have a poem. I'm going to read Budo's poem, I guess. Or AP, would you like to read Budo's poem?
I'm happy to read Budo's poem, bloody up. Absolutely.
Okay. Let me just get it here and...
Okay, lady, I'm going to have to take off.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for hanging out with me.
Have fun, Hatter.
Sure. Oh, hey, Sweet Pea, Sweet Pea, but, yeah.
Get your lines in for a poem.
What?
Get your lines in for our poem for Saturday.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah.
We'll do. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
All right.
I've got mine. Mine have come in. Okay, righto.
He's got two to do.
He's got two.
Okay, so I'm gonna put Budo's in the room there, if you wouldn't mind reading that.
Not a problem.
And Sweet, if you've got another Christmassy one or another one that you'd like to add or a story to tell, that would be great. I don't know if Deb's calling in or not, but, okay, here's Budo's. You already put it in there.
This is Angels of Riverside Hospital.
Yes.
By Budo. And it goes a little bit like this. January 2nd, 2011, I will always remember my quad bypass scheduled for December. A snowstorm tore through and dumped 7 inches. A surgeon called and cancelled, and man, I flinched. Lost 50 tough pounds to get this operation, now dreaded this stunt of delayed inaction. The longest week of my life was awaiting a first week of New Year's, not celebrating. The morning arrived and I thoroughly prepped an 8-hour appointment with a slight chance of death. I woke up in horror due to the tube in my throat. 3 nurses held taut and the 4th entered out. I was totally confused, but so grateful to wake. I cried on the gurney. The doc's hand I did shake. Recovery for 3 days in a hospital room. The nurses, angels, shared their lunch with me too. I will never forget that daunting ordeal that only was realised that I didn't feel the need to love me and take better care of my health and my spirit. I failed to prepare. And now, 8 years later, I've learned to take life one day at a time and refrain from the strife that will only detract from what angels have to see me live longer, and I know so far I have won. End poem.
Oh, what a beautiful piece. And I wrote back then, a year ago, certainly a life-changing experience when we face our mortality. We can't help but review how we live and love. And I'm so glad you're well today and the you're important in our lives. Just wow. And further to that, I would like to say how wonderful it is that he was able to wake up from this very dangerous surgery for him, have these nurses take care of him so that he felt that he could do this, that he could survive, and they gave him the dignity, the courage, and strength to do so. And that's a wonderful poem all around your survival, number one, and number two, to have those nurses take care of you, because I feel proud when I read something like this, because when you have someone who, you know, a real nurse, they care so much about their patients. You know, we care about them. And that shows, and that takes more than just the machines and the duties that they have to do, the procedures that have to be done and dressings and all the rest. It takes real compassion and care. And I'm so happy that you were able to experience that during this time. And we're so happy that you're still here and well. AP, what did you think as you read that?
Well, look, it's a very personal experience, Lady A, and I think the thing about it is that he sort of captured that sort of sense of that experience very, very well. It's difficult to actually capture something with regard to yourself, and it's difficult if that's being held under pressure or tension or anything else. It's just really difficult. And so to be able to do that with the clarity that he did, I think shows a terrific amount of perspective.
Yeah, excellent comment. And sweet.
Yeah, you know, Vito has shared this poem with me. And we had a couple of conversations before and after I went in for my open heart surgery. So, you know, he's kind of one of my angels that had a light heart and about the whole thing. And I really appreciate this poem a lot. I love the picture of the heart pillow because Lord knows I know what that's all about. He does capture it. He definitely captures that, the feeling of those nurses and being in that recovery room and, you know, learning to take life one day at a time. And you know, you do live longer. You look at life differently. And you know, I'll never forget mine was in July. It was hotter than heck, but you never forget going in and then coming out, because it's kind of, for me, you know, that's my second birthday. So I love this poem.
Wow.
And I love that he shared it with everybody.
Wow. Is it really the second birthday all coming up?
Yeah, I really feel that way. It's my second birthday.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, we got Deborah on the phone here. Hello, Deborah Lee. Hello. Good to have
Hi,
you.
Deb. Hanging in there. How about you?
Yes. Have you been listening in a little bit?
Well, I got here just as tweet was saying about her second birthday, so not very long.
Okay. This is some really good poetry for sure, and we have AP and Sweet, myself, and you, and Hatter was here right up until just a few minutes ago. He had to go. So we've had some great stories and some great poetry, too. Do you have a story that you want to tell and read a poem?
Well, I just called to say hi, so that giving support in some kind of way. I was looking through my things. I never had time to write because I got a lot going on with the art show tomorrow, and I was doing a couple other things, and I went looking for something that would fit, and this is the wrong night of the week for that, if you get my drift. So
yeah.
I don't.
That's okay. I do have a poem that I was going to, what time is it anyways? It's 20. We can read this one and close it down early, unless AP or Sweet, do you have another you would like to share?
I do have my other one you asked me to get.
Okay. Let's read it. And thanks, Budo, for submitting that poem for tonight. A wonderful, wonderful poem. Okay.
And then I believe Naomi might have put one up there, too. So we got to look. Or maybe not. Okay.
Okay.
So this is
all
the
right.
one I put up. That's not Naomi. Never mind.
She has a poem up there, Naomi?
No. No, I was reading something else.
Okay.
No, she does not.
Oh, okay. All right, so go ahead and let's hear you read White Picket Fence Christmas Memories.
Okay. Inside the warmth of my car, I listen to the music, caress the airwaves with satin swells of jingle bells, and watch the mist, the silver white droplets blanket the road, and freeze crystal constellations to my window shield. I drove beyond the city lights past the grayness of the snow, weaved by freezing cars lying bumper to bumper on the roads. As room through mirror reflections faded into drifts of alabaster shadows, memories of Christmas nights at Grandpa's home ignite. Winter's blessings colored the flowers that he planted along the edges of the fence he painted every spring. I listened to his love story every Christmas Eve as we hung the red and green blinking lights and placed a Christmas tree. Christmas at Grandpa's farm, a day when horses pulled sleighs and boys and girls played racing on sleds out to slay the ghosts of winter, to capture snowflake invaders on tongues and in eyelashes, until all were called in for hot chocolate by the fire. Red bows on silver packages glowed as the Christmas tree lights blinked against the foil shine of peppermints, a crushed red velvet skirt with matching crimson stockings over the hearth created Christmas magic for all who believed in the season. My drive nears its end and moonlight shines into the window pane of my home and under the mistletoe. I smell the colors of Christmas, taste the joy of laughter, and a reason to paint a fence in the spring. End poem.
This is so lovely. I think that these are the kind of memories that every kid should have when they grow up and they can look back. And I love the way you say Grandpa. Just how you say it, it just sounds right. And these memories are very special because to me, I live sometimes my life vicariously, all joking aside, through other people's childhoods, and because it makes me think of what could have been, and this is a piece that does that for me. when you can think of, you know, Grandpa's house. And the whole piece is very lovely to me that way. And if I talk too much longer, I'll probably end up crying. But I think this is a really, it's how it should be, to be able to reminisce and look back like this and have those special moments in time. Deb, what did you think of it?
Well, Lady A,
yeah.
I want you to know both my grandfathers passed before I was old enough to remember them. So this is what I had hoped life would have been for me, too.
Okay. Wow. You know what? That makes it even more special somehow. Wow. Deb, what did you think?
Well, for starters, I remember this one because, of course, because of the coloring in the photo. And it was one, if you look in my comments, I was giving her a standing ovation down there for it. But for me, it was big time memories because until I had my first child, I had four grandpas, two great-grandfathers. So, like, I could see some of these scenes. And we did quite often get dressed after opening presents and go to grandma's for dinner. And it was just like all the different things that you have in here just put me to some of the trips over there. And, you know, as a kid, you're thinking, Naked, you give me all this stuff, and now I have to leave the house. And now those memories of being drug out, even though you wanted to stay and play with all your new stuff, are priceless. So
yeah,
just back to all of those. Thank you, my sweet.
Welcome.
Yeah, beautiful. And AP?
It's a lovely poem. I can't hope to compete with the nostalgia in this poem and the way it's described. It's really quite beautiful. So I'm in my choice of next poem, Lady A, I'm going to go something completely different because I you know, Sweet's got this one nailed.
Okay.
Thank you, AP.
Did you want to put it on the board? Are you going to read it?
I warn you, it's different.
Okay.
I'm going to say it aloud. It comes with a warning of difference here. Sweet Pea was, you know, sweet, elegant, quite beautiful in their descriptions. And this, in contrast, is a sociopathic cow. And it goes a little bit like this. There were bovines with guns and the tough herd at the plough, but they don't carry a candle to tail the sociopathic cow. Had his own Lincoln and trailer, could retreat from storm psalms, while his recordings of bands annoyed many without arms. The sociopathic cows do not kill, as that's the end that most will face. Instead, he helped out with gifts, and the older cows would brace, as let mooing to young ones, and at night lines shine on the place. For the true sociopaths, for those that moo too long into space. End poem.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that is really sick.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
This goes to the
cows
with guns scenarios.
Go ahead, sweet. What did you think?
Why do I feel this is written for me?
Oh, that was excellent.
This is cows with guns. And this is a whole thing Hatter put everybody up to, I believe, at one point. Oh, my God, this is hilarious.
Oh yes, I remember him having that. Yeah, because I wrote one about a cow, and I got so many comments. It wasn't even funny. beef savers, vegetarians. Sorry.
As left mooing to the young ones. and it looks
oh,
like
this is so funny.
Her true associates are those that move too long in space.
Oh, Deborah.
My God. I don't even know what to say.
I'm having too much fun this
It's just basically
giggle.
A giggle on a page. That's what this is. It's a giggle on a page. And it's awesome, and it's funny, and I, it's just fantastic. It's just fantastic.
Thank you very much.
I'm also cracking up because you guys are leaving Hatter, and if I remember correctly, all credit goes to AP, including the crazy-ass intro song about cows with guns. Just saying.
Was it you?
Oh.
I'm blaming my Hatter, and it was all you, AP?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like,
and then somebody said, I milked this home for all of the sorts. Oh, too good, yeah. That was really funny. Oh, oh my goodness.
Never speak of my crime. No one will ever know.
That just altered my mood a lot. Thanks.
Thank you, Deb.
Let me see now. I'm going to put one in there. It's not as funny. I don't feel like I should add anything to this one because we got the good laughs. But I'm going to add one in the end here just to kind of, this is called Santa's Helper Elves, and it's a true story. Maybe that will help a little bit. Thank you, AP, for the laughter. That was great. Santa's Helper Elves. Santa tries to keep his promises for each child who sends wishes. Dreams of tinker toys and dolls, snakes and ladders and rubber balls. Thumbelina turned her head like real babies in their beds. Christmas PJs and warm socks. Misbehave and you'll get coal rocks. Trains, trucks, and dinky cars. Kids excited for Mr. Claus. Parents go to great lengths to be Santa's helper elves. Advertise little girls watch kids from the Cabbage Patch. Santa, we've been so good. We'd love one if you could. Santa's helper elves searched high on every shelf. Cabbage Patch kids weren't found, only tired elfish frowns. Rumor said Eaton's store, limited supplies, oh Lord. Elves lined up at 5 a.m., finally got three of them. Each girl got her own doll, a blonde, brunette, and redhead. Santa got the credit. Mom and Dad used debit.
Mm-hmm.
End poem.
Indeed.
Oh, my God. I've had the
cabbage patch dolls. That's a true story, honestly. Waiting in line at 5 o'clock in the morning at Eaton's to get these dolls, yeah.
Nope. I had the cabbage patch dolls myself, and this is a true story of these things that everybody went insane for.
Yeah.
At the time, my parents had a flower shop, and they were doing flowers, and people were requesting to have bouquets sent or have these dolls with bouquets, and the parents were like, this is a flower shop, you can't get these dolls, and I can't do a bouquet with Cabbage Patch doll. I don't know if they thought that was a way to bypass realtors or stores that they could order a bouquet and have a Cabbage Patch doll with it. I don't know what they thought, but my parents were getting cussed out like by people like, well, this is what I want. I'll pay extra. And my dad's like, dude, no. But, yeah, my parents had that wrapped down. Flower shop. You know, my father was a minister. My mom baked cakes, and they owned a flower shop. I think they were running a racket at the time. But whatever. But I love this because it was crazy. And your poem just fits how weird it really was back then.
Yeah.
So that's really rock. So, Deb, your thoughts on the Cabbage Patch child insanity?
Yeah. The pictures in the background and in the poem are bringing back memories. and I just realized I have mine in a box somewhere. But, like, this is really cool, and it was such a craze. And it's like, I like how you captured it. Rumor said, Eaton store. Limited supplies, oh, Lord. Elves lined up at 5 a.m., finally got three of them. I couldn't even imagine trying to come up with some of the fads, and this was one of the worst. So I like the way you made light of it. Actually, what I wrote was, this is excellent and filled with truth. I remember the scramble to find these dolls and many other things. Great read and write.
Thank you.
AP, did you have to chase down Cabbage Patch dolls?
No, thank God. No, I think I was too old and Ava was too young. So we bypassed Cabbage Patch dolls, thank goodness.
What about?
Because they are really quite, oh, man, they just look evil. No, I mean, I'd hate to see them in a room and you know, I could have, but just through a fate of timing that didn't work out that way, thank God. But I do remember the craze, and it was madness. You know, people were doing stupid things to get hold of Cabbage Patch dolls. I mean, Cabbage Patch dolls, for goodness sake. And people were doing dumb things just to get one of them, much less three. So I completely get it, Lady A. And I think it's going to be that type of Christmas, by the way. I think it's going to be a Christmas where whatever the trends are, you know, good luck in getting something because, you know, you just the global supply chain is stuffed. So there's a Cabbage Patch run on this year, there'd be none to find.
No kidding.
Wow. Yeah, it's I think that there's a lot of wacky people out there that
there are.
I think
Yeah,
I mean, even Black Friday brings them out too, you know, they're grabbing and going and carrying on it. But I don't thanks Deb for calling in. Appreciate it very much. And I think that, you know, they trample each other, yes, and they grabbing and fighting and all the rest of it. It's not worth it, you know. It's just stuff, you guys.
No.
Go home and eat your Christmas pudding, you know. Right? Get with your family and enjoy the
crazy
presents.
Stuff.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I'm content if I have them all, my kids under the same roof. If they're here in the house, I'm happy. You know, it doesn't mean you have to go shopping or go on a trip or buy them stuff or anything like that. As long as they're under my roof and all together, I am just the happiest person in the world. I truly am. And, so do we have any more poems or shall we call it an evening?
I was just going to suggest, Lady A, that Sweet and I could pump our show, which is Sweet and Dour on Friday night. Yes. So
not before I talk about my show on Thursday.
Okay, you can talk about your show on Thursday first. Okay, cool.
But first I have to talk about the show on Wednesday.
Okay, you can do that too.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, tomorrow night is the Winter Park Paint Out Show.
Okay.
So the big show where, you know, we're going to have our special guest, and we've got all
the Winter Park,
yes. And so that's a very special show for Dreamer Voices. We were selected once again to represent, so everybody should call. Great painters, great poets, great show.
Yep.
Thursday,
I'm not there,
Thursday
but I have
night.
Done some recordings. I've done recordings.
Okay. Excellent. Thursday night, come sit around the fire, bring what you want. It's all about kicking back, no fuss, no muss. It's open poetry from now to the end of the year on some discussions. No, great.
Yes.
Now you can headline our show.
Aha! We are going to do it.
Well, first of all, before you do that, I would like to know, is this a new thing for Friday nights, you and AP?
Oh, only once a month.
Once a month. Yeah, it's like sort of satellites that get together only occasionally because of different orbits, Lady A, but once a month. And sweetened our. And this wonderful episode, we are talking, of course, about just the most wonderful thing, which is, of course, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And we have a series of quotes from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and Sweet has chosen a number, and I have chosen a number, and there is something for everyone, basically. So I'm going to quote one of Sweet's ones because I like it. Since we decided a few weeks ago to adopt the leaf as legal tender, we have, of course, all become immensely rich. I think that's a wonderful quote. And then a short one from me, which I really love, Lady A. The ships hung in the sky in much the same way that bricks don't. I'll say that again. The ships hung in the sky in much the same way that bricks don't. Just a brilliant piece of writing. Brilliant writing. Something for everybody in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and those quotes there.
Yes.
So the quotes that you have quoted, both of you, are they your own quotes?
Yes. No. They are from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. No.
Oh, okay.
I'm nowhere near clever enough to do that quote, Lady A. Nowhere near clever enough.
No, neither am I. No, not at all. Oh. But the biggest quote
of
all
is, great.
Yes, don't panic. Yes, don't panic.
Don't panic.
Yes.
The worst thing you can do
panic.
Is panic. Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. So, there you go. We're getting out the towels. We're getting out the number 42. We're talking about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and your poems about it.
Okay.
And it's just a glorious thing. Wonderful writer.
Okay, so I'm not familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, so this is all new to me. And
yes.
Well,
this gives you the opportunity, Lady A, to at least read the first chapter. That's enough. You'll be captured by this.
Right.
Don't panic. The answer is 42. But I don't know what
the
number is. I find it funny. I think it's hilarious. So this is going to be very fun, I think.
So the whole idea is that, I was going to say, the whole idea to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is that they need to remove Earth to make way for a new highway.
For a hyperspace yes, that's right.
Time to get out of the way, Earth.
That's it.
I love
Don't
number
panic,
six. May I read it?
Yes.
Of course you can.
Number six, it says, protect me from knowing what I don't need to know. Protect me from even knowing that there are things to know that I don't know. Protect me from knowing that I decided not to know about the things that I decided not to know about. Amen.
That's the one.
Wow. Well, this would be fun.
That is a good rule to live by.
Yes.
I like number five, too.
Yes. No, well, I also like the space one, Lady A. But space is big. You just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. I mean, you may think it's a long way down the road to the chemists, but that's just peanuts to space. I love that.
There is an art. It says, or rather, a knack to flying. Knack lies in learning how to throw yourself at the ground and miss.
I like that, too. There's so many great quotes.
But this number 10 is the most...
We restricted ourselves
the answer to the great question of life, the universe, and everything, is 42. I'm very curious about that.
No, that's a great book, Lady A. It is a glorious book. It really is. It needs to be read by everybody. It is just a brilliant, brilliant piece of writing.
It is.
Did they do a movie?
They did a movie.
Yes, they did, and a TV series.
Really? I've never heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, Lady A, that's why we're doing you've just proven the reason for us to do it in the first place.
And number one is the biggest question in the universe. Has it already happened? Because that is the theories we struggle with. And I think that that's something that he will.
This foreign wife here will instantly disappear and be replaced by something even more bizarre. It has to be a comedy, this book and movie.
Well, it's not really. It's interesting because it's sort of a book about life, Lady A, and it just happens to be humorous on the way past.
Okay. They're all terrific quotes. Isn't it enough to see a garden is beautiful without having to believe there are fairies at the bottom of it, too?
Yep.
The quotes have some very powerful meaning behind them, even though they're humorous.
Yes, correct. Correct. So, that is our program for Saturday. For Friday, and Saturday for me.
Friday.
And then Saturday, it's Hatter and Deb and I, and the prompt is the great Shakespeare quote, of course, that all the world's a stage.
Okay.
Right about that.
Oh, that's on Saturday.
Yep.
Sweet and Dour. Sweet and Dour is going to educate the world on the number 42, and whether or not we're living in the old universe or the new universe or the universe that was discovered and now we're in the unexplainable universe, has it already happened?
Correct.
Now, I want to know who,
Scott.
Did you together do this research get these quotes, or did
or the other do it?
Oddly enough, we discovered we both enjoyed The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
And so Sweet got her six quotes, and I got my six quotes. You know, we put them together.
Okay. So your future shows for once a month, are they going to be about books and that's quotes from books?
Who knows? Good question.
We don't know.
When we work that out, you'll be the first to know.
Okay. I'm very interested in this. People can come up with these kinds of brilliant, entertaining prompts. I'm very envious. This is really good. Don't panic. Worst thing you can do is panic.
Don't panic.
Whatever else you do, don't panic. Just grab a towel. 42. Grab a towel. The answer is 42.
The answer is 42. I love that. Okay, so what I want to do now is I'm going to say thank you to Hatter and Deb, and to Sweet P, and to AP, to Budo, and to me for showing up at this very, very last-minute show. And I appreciate each of you and the poems you brought, the stories been told, and look forward to first Thursday night and Friday night, and tomorrow night is the Winter Art Show. And I have been out of the loop intentionally and have had to have a break, and I'm coming back hopefully a little brighter and smarter and wittier, happier, and all the rest of it. And so I'm looking forward to the next three evenings, that's for sure. And thank you all for calling and making your presence known and sharing the evening with me.
Thank you.
Well, I'm about to get off the phone, Lady A, because we have a major storm that's about to come across with damaging winds, large hailstones, and heavy rainfall. It was released a few minutes ago for those people in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne.
Take care and be safe.
Well, I intend to.
Okay,
tomorrow,
everybody.
Good
night.
Good night.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Night.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks.